And welcome to the Rick House. My name is Cyrus Farmer, and you are watching and listening to the Stomp the Tea podcast. Folks, as most of you know by now, we are in Japan, in the wonderful city of Tokyo, giving you this latest episode. Folks, we have a lot to get through, and I'm going to tell you what we're going to be doing right now. It is going to be all Tokyo, all the time. We're going to be talking about the flight to Tokyo. We're going to talk about first impressions, my first impressions of Tokyo as a city. And instead of what are you drinking tonight, we're going to be talking about next week's episode. But before we get into all of that, I do want to run down a couple of thoughts on my Philadelphia Eagles. Folks, I'm telling you right now, this Eagles team, boy oh boy, I cannot say enough about the way they are playing these days. What an impressive win against the Pittsburgh Steelers last week. Now, they have another game that could be a trap game this coming week. I believe it's against Washington. But before we jump ahead, let's review. This Eagles team, they are really primed to make a Super Bowl run. And I have to tell you, I'm very impressed with their ability to respond. I'm impressed with how they've come together. I have to give Coach Sirianni a lot of credit. I've been hard, as most of you know, from time to time on Coach Sirianni. But to be fair, his team responds when needed, and they seem to respond to him. This whole Brandon Graham thing was a mess. We talked about it last week, and they just bounced back like the true potential champions that they are. And I have to tell you, at this point, I can't worry about Saquon Barkley winning the MVP. I can't worry about Saquon Barkley getting Eric Dickerson's rushing title or even leading the league in rushing. My only worry and concern right now is getting to and winning the Super Bowl. That's what this Eagles team needs to do. So I think that they're going to be focused. I think they are primed to make a legitimate run at a championship. I really, really do believe that this has the markings of what could be a very, very special team. So let's not put the cart before the horse. Let's take each week as it comes. But let me just say I'm very impressed with the way they responded to last week's turmoil in the game against Pittsburgh. Now, that being said, I do have to say, Detroit, yeah, they could be in a little bit of trouble as far as I'm concerned. Lions, they had a tough game against Buffalo. They played well. Buffalo just played better. And there is no shame, don't get me wrong, in losing to the Buffalo Bills, especially the way Josh Allen has been playing. But that being said, I think they may be in a little bit of trouble. They do have the final game of the year against the Minnesota Vikings. And as we've discussed before, I don't know how good the Vikings are or not. But my suspicion is they're a pretty good ball team. I think Sam Darnold, as I said before, can do enough with the weapons that he has to make that team competitive against anybody. Their defense and their scheme plays very well. And if I were Detroit, I would be a little bit concerned about that final game of the year. But you can't even jump to that final game of the year if you're Detroit because you got a couple games to play before then. So I'm just trying to tell you, with the way that Jalen is playing, with the way that AJ is playing, with the way that Devontae is playing, with the way that our young defense is playing, folks, I told you this before, and I'm going to tell you again. Be careful. You do not want to see the Philadelphia Eagles in the Super Bowl. I'm telling you, it could be grease the pole time. Now, what do I mean when I say grease the poles? Some of you may or may not know, but in Philadelphia, the fan base can tend to be a little rowdy and raucous at times. So one of the things that the city has taken to doing, you know, there used to be a jail underneath the field, Veterans Stadium, because the fans are so rowdy. They would actually put people in the jail from the stands. So one of the things that they do to kind of prevent rowdiness post-game, when win or lose, in big games, is they put grease on the light poles in and around both South Philadelphia and Broad Street, some of the other areas where fans are known to congregate after big games, championship games, Super Bowls, playoff games, and they grease the poles so that Philadelphians can't climb them as easily and, you know, wave their hands and yell and scream or do whatever. So it may be grease the pole time in a month or two. We don't know yet, but I will tell you this. Philadelphia Eagles are for real, and I think they are actually going to get better, believe it or not, as the rest of this season goes along into the playoffs. So be careful, America. Be careful. All right. So before we get into this episode, I'd like to remind you to also subscribe, like, tell your friends, tell your enemies, anything you would do to support a show or a podcast that you like and enjoy, especially one such as this. Make sure that you are hitting those like buttons. Make sure that you are subscribing and telling everyone about the scintillating content that you receive from this podcast here. So, I'm going to go over my notes. The flight. Let's start with the flight to Tokyo. So, we flew out of Newark, New Jersey, EWR, and flew into Narita Airport, which is one of the two airports in the Tokyo proximity. We flew Comfort Select, I think that was what it was. It's basically a regular seat with a little extra leg room. I can tell you, the flight was full. There weren't many empty seats, and the fight for overhead space was real. There were a number of passengers and customers who were rearranging other people's bags in the overhead compartments. For some reason, the overhead compartments seemed to be a little smaller than they would be on a United States domestic flight. But whatever the reason was, there was a real premium on getting your carry-on luggage overhead, and it didn't work out as well for everyone. Now, the flight crew, I have to tell you, now, we flew United, and United did a great job. They got us there safely, and the crew itself, boy, oh boy, I'm telling you, they were working the entire flight. Now, this flight consisted of, let me look at my notes, three snacks, two full meals, and beverage service, which each of those five times that you were consuming any kind of food. In addition to that, they were doing trash runs up and down the aisles. They were maintaining the aisles, the flight attendants, with people and passengers who were lining up to go to the bathroom throughout the flight. It was really impressive to see. They earned every penny of their money. You think an international flight is very easy to pull off, and if you're a flight attendant, you can kind of just kick back and put your feet up? Not the case as far as I'm concerned. A flight of this length requires everyone to work more than they normally would. Now, when I say a flight of this length, what do I mean? Folks, the flight from Newark, New Jersey to Tokyo, Japan. Now, mind you, this is a nonstop. This flight was 14 hours nonstop. Let me repeat that for you. It was a 14-hour flight straight. Folks, I'm telling you right now, the only saving grace is that it was actually a nonstop. But 14 hours is the equivalent of flying essentially from New York to Los Angeles, Los Angeles to New York, and New York to Los Angeles, all without ever landing. That's what a 14-hour flight is. I got to tell you, it was a hole. Did I feel the entire 14 hours? No. I have to say the first 5, 6, 7, 8 hours even were not that bad. You make it through, you read, you do some work, you do a little bit of movie watching if you need to. But once you hit about hour 9 and then you look at the clock and thinking you've been really good, you realize there are 5 hours left to the flight. That's definitely a gut check. You know, there's nothing you can do. I mean, it's not like you can jump out of the plane. You can't leave. You're stuck on the plane. You're just trying to let time pass, hopefully, as quickly as possible. And what do they say about cooking? A boiled pot never, no, a watched pot never boils, right? And when you're starting to look at your watch or the flight path and everything to see if any time has passed, every what feels like 2 minutes, kind of stresses out the time. That last 5 hours was, I got to tell you, it was definitely a slog. And I was very happy to be on the ground. Was I stir crazy? No. Was it the worst? No. But it was a full 14 hours. And I felt every minute of those 14 hours. I'm just telling you, it's a long flight. Now, I got to tell you, no matter how much you stand up, either in your seat or in the aisles, how many times you go to the bathroom just to stretch your legs, a 14-hour flight, you're going to end up with a sore butt. You just are. You're sitting for too long a stretch during that 14-hour flight. I mean, you're not in the aisles like Russell Wilson a couple of years ago when he was with Denver, doing squats and leg lifts and knee lifts, working out the entire flight in the aisle. You know, you're not doing that because there are other passengers there, and you're not the quarterback of the Denver Broncos, no matter how good or bad you are. You're going to end up with a sore butt. It took me 2 days to get my butt feeling less fatigued from all of that sitting. So there's that. Now, the flight path was a little interesting as far as I'm concerned. It was, it took us up through mid-Alaska and then down, crossing the Bering Sea into Tokyo, kind of a soft arc. I was surprised by that flight path. I'm sure it's either standard or the way that was directed to the pilots on that given day. I'm sure it's not unusual, but I thought it would be more straight across. So that was interesting. I got to tell you, you know, when you're on a 14-hour flight and you see the plane heading north, you're like, wait a minute, come down. But it doesn't come down until it gets through Alaska. Very strange. All right. So first impressions of Tokyo, I got to tell you, folks. It is a fascinating city. Fascinating. The first thing I noticed is it is just very, very big. I mean, it's a sprawling city with density and all the things associated with density and sprawling. The trip from the airport to our hotel was about an hour and a half, and it went through 2 tolls at least. You know, the density of the city itself, and this is Tokyo I'm talking about, is absolutely mind-blowing. I mean, you can't really imagine. No, imagine a city like New York, right? And you see high-rises everywhere. And then you see Central Park. And then you see these skyscrapers, which are commercial buildings, right? So magnify that by about 5, and you kind of get a sense of what Tokyo is. I mean, there are stores and shopping centers and malls everywhere, as far as the eye can see, folks, I'm telling you, it is a shopper's paradise. I cannot explain to you how many shopping places, retail centers, retail businesses that there are throughout Tokyo. They're everywhere. And one of the strange things about Tokyo is that you have so many high-end brands, Balenciaga, Herman Miller, Tiffany's, you name it, Valentino. Think of the biggest brands in the world, and you have them here in Tokyo. But not only do you have them here in Tokyo, you have multiple existence of each of these stores throughout the city. I think I've seen, and I've only been through three or four neighborhoods, but I think I've seen at least three Tiffany's. Three, right? There's a Harry Winston's here. You know, there's just any high-end store you can think of. They have multiple outlets of these stores sprinkled throughout all of these neighborhoods in Tokyo. It is absolutely fascinating. It's mind-blowing. In addition to all that retail space that you have when you're walking through the city, one of the strangest and most striking things about Tokyo is that you have almost an equal number of retail outlets, of restaurants, of dives, of food places, all underground in the subway Tokyo, in the Tokyo subway. It is unbelievable. Folks, when I tell you that the infrastructure underground, when I talk about underground, I'm talking about these subway stations, each stop. The infrastructure is massive. Think about, for those of you who've been to New York, think about Grand Central Station. Think about Penn Station, right? And if you know those two areas of New York, the subway and the trains run underneath the surface of this city. And there are places to eat. There are magazine stands. There are bookstores. There are all sorts of things. There's Brooks Brothers down there. I mean, there's all sorts of things, right? So imagine that in New York, on those two stops, those are the two best examples I can think of, right? But if you know the rest of the New York City subway network, imagine if you had that infrastructure, Grand Central and Penn Station, at every single subway stop in New York. That's what Tokyo is. Almost every single stop on the metro line, the subways, they have these massive hallways and retail centers and food places and restaurants and shops. I'm going to post some stuff online. You'll see in the socials. And this is just a glimpse of what you'll see if you travel in Tokyo. But it is unbelievable. It's mind-boggling. It's absolutely mind-boggling. There is so many places to shop and to eat. Speaking of eating, Tokyo is a great food town. It's a great food town. You can get pretty much anything you want here. Obviously, sushi, ramen, soba, udon, French, Italian, steak, German food is big here. It is a world-class food city, high and low, which is one of the things that is so attractive about it as a city. Now, I have to tell you, there is very little trash on the ground. Rumors are true. Now, you can find trash if you know where to look in Tokyo, certain areas, and obviously in the morning, if you go, especially on trash day, you'll see some trash out that aren't in cans. But one of the things that are fascinating is this. Apparently, I'm not sure how true this is or not, but apparently, the Japanese people, at least the ones that live in Tokyo, do not eat or drink in the road, in the street. They literally don't do any of that. And I have to tell you, I have not seen a lot of Japanese citizens of Tokyo eating like a bagel or, you know, a hot dog or whatever, anything, while they're walking through the streets. I haven't seen them drink disposable coffee while they're walking through the streets. And I think one of the reasons is because it is almost impossible to find a public trash can. It's almost impossible to find a public trash can in Tokyo. You don't see it. So as a result, it is very difficult to find a way to dispose of trash. It's very, very interesting. And it's unique. So there's that. There's almost no jaywalking in Tokyo. It's very strange. People are very orderly, which is fantastic. Another thing that I thought was interesting is that there are Japanese actually have, they eat, excuse me just a moment.